Welcome to this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. On this week's episode, the guys talk about three ways you can add value to your home in 2025, while also talking about how a Republican-led Congress could affect the housing market under the Trump presidency. All while reviewing Stone Street Founders Edition Small Batch Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey.
Well, jingle my bells and call me Chris Kringle. We are back for another episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks, powered by Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective on YouTube, as well as Fathom Realty and Keller Williams Downtown. My name is Charlie Sardelli, and as always, I'm here with...
Jameson Amoros, a.k.a. the guy that's not going to jingle your bells.
I ain't jingling shit.
And who are you?
I don't know if I tell you now. Oscar Ibarra.
And guys, as you know, this is Real Estate.
Intro now.
This is Real Estate Served on the Rocks, and we do this podcast at our beautiful sponsor here at the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro in Greenwood Village, Colorado, off of exit 197 on I-25. And the reason that we do our shows here is because the head chef, Chris Collins, is a bourbon man himself, and he brings us the most fantastic bourbons.
He's more like a bourbon god.
Yeah.
He's a super cool
or a bourbon,
guy.
A bourbon. No, you know what? He's a bourbon cool. Guardian angel.
He is. I like that.
Yes.
I've tasted some bourbons I didn't even know existed.
Yeah. Or the bourbon godmother.
Mm-hmm. Father.
He just floats down every once in a while.
Guys, when I'm here first and Chris, I'm setting up the podcast, Chris walks, I hear the door open, and then Chris walks out always holding the bottle like this, walking towards me. I'm just like, you majestic human.
He is.
We should get
bourbon.
An edit of like a bright light shining behind him with like angelic music as he brings
he
up
is the bourbon fairy godfather.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
Right there. Exactly.
Like
exactly.
Like if you had a fairy godmother but a godfather and he was into bourbon, that'd be Chris.
It would.
He's magical.
He is. And guys, as you know, this is a real estate podcast, but we also drink bourbon. And since it is a kind of a holiday-ish episode, we're only a week out before Christmas. And on that note, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah,
Kwanzaa,
whatever you celebrate.
Anything and everything you celebrate,
yeah.
We respect you.
Exactly.
I mean, if you want to tell me Happy Hanukkah, only if you're bringing me seven gifts too, though.
Merry Chrysler.
I'll take it. I'll be like,
Merry Chrysler.
Merry
yeah.
Chrysler.
Have a Krimum.
Have a Krimum. Merry Chrysler.
Hey, someone told me, hey, that's a cool Santa sweater drinking a beer.
No, it's John Daly, baby.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
I was like, what? Don't you ever call John Daly Santa again.
It's amazing. That is amazing. Well,
sip it and rip it.
He'd be more like bad. Awesome. He'd be like bad Santa.
Yes.
He would be bad Santa.
Oh, the new one with...
he'd be bad Santa.
Dear Santa.
Yes.
With Jack Black.
Mm. Oh, that... Oh,
it's
that
not kid-friendly. I let my kids watch
no,
it.
No, but it's Oof. Hilarious.
Yeah? It's funny. My son says, now Merry freaking Christmas.
Yes.
He's six.
I'm going to have to watch it.
Damn.
All right. On today's episode, like I said, since this is kind of around the holidays, what we want to do is kind of pull back a little bit. We've had a couple of intense episodes over the last couple months for you guys, and we've drank some pretty intense bourbons in
this
time.
Yes, we have.
So we're just going to kind of relax on this episode, and what we want to do with this one is do another headlines episode for you guys. Just kind of pull two articles and talk about the contents of those articles in relation to the housing market and you as a consumer, real estate market, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So we love doing these episodes because it gives us a chance to kind of riff on each other and just kind of talk overall about what the market sentiment is
yep.
around these articles. So on that note, we're going to move into the bourbon that we're going to have for today's episode. And the bourbon that we're drinking today is called Stone Street Bourbon, and it is a straight Kentucky bourbon whiskey, and it's made in Stone Street in Kentucky. Oh, yeah. Get that bottle pop in there. And this one is actually really cool. The history behind it is, for me, I didn't think about it really before Chris handed me the bottle. And the reason Chris wanted to do this pour was because it's kind of a signature bottle. They're a little bit younger. So they started their company, their horse company, in 2005. And that's led them to make this bourbon. Now, the reason that I say this kind of blew my mind is when we think of bourbon, you normally think of Kentucky, which Kentucky Derby, right?
It's only 84th. 84 proof?
94.
94.
Oh.
Yeah, 94.
But yes, also only 94 proof.
Yes, only. We've been above the 100, so we're coming back down. But what's interesting about this one is this is a barrel select, basically like a small batch. So they only made 150 barrels of this guy. And the whole point, the whole thing with this company is that they actually started their company back in 2005 breeding racehorses.
Okay.
So they breed like high-quality racehorses that have actually won awards. So they have three
like
horses.
Like won races, I'm assuming.
Well, like, yeah, like
thoroughbred horses.
Thoroughbred horses. Yeah, they're known for thoroughbred horses.
I thought you were going to say they were breeding bourbon.
I mean,
well, that's,
I mean, technically, but but they bought their they got the horses and they got everything going with them, won 3 awards, and then they said, you know what, this has been an adventure and we want to continue on with that. For me, the thing that I think is amazing is they released this at 5 years. So this is aged for 5 years. Most companies that get into bourbon, you guys got to recognize, like, they're waiting for these barrels. Right. It's an investment up front. That's why so many companies you see 2 years, because they need to flip and get that.
2 or 3, yeah.
Yeah, because they need to flip and get that money going. They've sat on this for 5 years and let it age. And the reason that they did this is because they want to bring a certain level of complexity.
Did we, what was Old Soul?
Oh, 6.
Old Soul was
6 years.
Yeah.
So it's
6 years. Yeah.
Similar,
because at 121 early, proof.
There were 2010.
Yeah. That bottle disappeared real fast at my house,
oh, yeah,
by the way.
Oh, both it's of gone. You guys? Yeah. They're gone. It's gone at my house, too.
Yeah, I got to get on it. But I'm saving it for,
well, everybody
special
that
occasion.
Came over, I was like, try this.
That's
this.
What I did.
Yeah. Fantastic.
One for you, two
no,
for me.
No, that's what I was going to say. I was like, try this. Yeah, try this.
Exactly.
Try this.
That, yeah. And anyway, honestly, it's just, again, a testament to Chris, because we never would have known about that bottle.
Nope.
And he handed it to us. Not at all. Just like this one.
I mean, just trying to read up on it.
Yeah.
Cathead. I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then you get a little bit more. They're blues fans and stuff like that. Same with this. I mean, thoroughbred horses, Kentucky, that ties together. Woodford Reserves, you know,
yeah,
kind of vibe. Again, it doesn't have to be high proof to be good, so I'm
yeah,
excited to have.
Well, I'm glad that
and
you
it's still it's not high proof, but it's still 47%.
Yeah.
I mean,
glad that you brought
come
up
on, we're bourbon drinkers.
I know.
We don't drink tequila and vodka on the regular. We're bourbon drinkers, and mm-hmm, it's 100 proof plus. That's how we roll.
I'm glad you brought up Woodford Reserve and Kentucky Derby, specifically because I didn't realize this, but after Prohibition, what do you think the biggest sport was in the United States?
After?
Yep.
Baseball.
Above baseball? Horse racing.
Yeah.
Isn't that, it blew my mind. And the reason I said I'm glad you brought up Woodford Reserve is because Woodford Reserve is the reason that bourbon is so closely related to the Kentucky Derby, that they just recently, I think within the last 5 years, the Kentucky Derby actually changed their name to Kentucky Derby by Woodford Reserve. And they've been ingrained in that ecosystem mm-hmm, since the late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And they won that with a solid marketing campaign, but they're the ones that are accredited.
They're the only ones that yeah, they usually push.
Exactly.
I don't know if you ever watched the Kentucky Derby.
No.
Mm-hmm. Every year. I don't have Cinco de Mayo parties. I yeah, leave that for the Mexicans. I do Kentucky Derby parties.
That's awesome.
I just do.
Yeah.
Seersuckers and everything. Yeah.
And well,
mint
and
juleps.
Well, you should fashions. Do. You should do the Kentucky Derby, because, you know, and if you've ever, the hat people here, they always have to call the fancy hats, right?
Hat people.
Here. the people around me that can't grow hair.
I can grow hair.
I'm losing it.
I can grow hair. I just.
But what I'm saying is, you should just combine the cultures, and then
bit,
you
so
just do the Kentucky Derby, right?
Yep.
And then with the crazy hats, instead of these crazy fancy hats, do sombreros.
Oh, we've done that before.
There si, you go.
Si se puede.
I mean, we did cowboy hats and mariachi sombreros 1 year.
Si. Yeah.
And I didn't. I don't know.
Feliz
how the heck,
Navidad.
Greg Nelson. I don't remember if you met Greg Nelson. He looks like Eddie Murphy, good buddy.
No, oh, yeah, I met him.
Yeah, veteran.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he shows up with a sombrero and a kilt.
There you go.
So
that's how you meld things together.
And
culturally confusing.
And Greg Nelson is—he's black, African American gentleman, super cool. But yeah, he shows up just confusing the shit out of everybody in a kilt and a sombrero on Cinco de Mayo.
Now he just needs a kimono to.
I'm pretty sure he has that too. He spends a lot of time in that part of the world.
That's awesome,
because he was he's a Marine.
Well, if you guys want to look him up, it's Stone
Greg
Street.
Greg Nelson.
Yeah. Stone Street Bourbon Whiskey, but. So the three horses, they've won 3 times, but it's 2 of their horses. So their horse Curlin won in 2007 and 2008, won American Horse of the Year. And then the horse Rochelle Alexandra won in 2009. And the reason that I bring this up is because if you guys, you know, if you know what it's like to raise prize horses, like, it is a multi-million dollar industry. It the science behind it is incredible. The energy that goes into it to make sure these horses are well taken care of,
it's
at top performance.
Too.
Yeah, it's extremely expensive.
Listen, if you ever want to know the industries that are lucrative that you should get into if you have the money, just copy whatever the cartels are doing.
Oh, I thought you were going to say porn.
No, because if you look at the Mexican cartels, they're embedded in those same industries. So there's a great documentary. Great documentary.
Now I'm not going to tell you what I was going to say.
On
you
Apple
suck, dude.
On Apple TV.
We had Quarter Mile Horses in Mexico.
Called the horse cartel.
They weren't, you know, Kentucky Derby because they do, I don't know how much the, how long the lap is, but we had Quarter Mile Horses. And mm-hmm. we had one that was, his parents were Kentucky Derby contenders.
Yeah.
It was Dylan DeSimone was the, we renamed him when we got him, but it was a beautiful stallion. It was awesome horse.
Yeah.
But even the, even those horses, Quarter Mile, they're expensive, you know, the vet visits and whatnot.
I've had the opportunity to do some filming of horses in the last year, and they're beautiful. They're gorgeous, gorgeous creatures. Like the musculature and the contrast that they have is for video and photo, fucking gorgeous. But the reason that I give you kind of that background on them and the dedication that they've had to that raising and having these three successful horses is because they've taken that into their bourbon pursuits. And like I said, this is aged for 5 years. It's gone through multiple iterations, but this is kind of their tagline for the company. And it says, "And always we will chase perfection, knowing the pursuit is infinite. That is precisely why we believe the future of Stone Street bourbon knows no bounds."
So this says Founders Edition. Does that have mm-hmm. anything to play into it?
Is so a, this is the product? First. This is their okay. first that they brought to market with their bourbons. And again, age 5 years. But that quote right there, just I'm excited to drink it mm-hmm. because knowing that you're never going to reach perfection but always striving for it just continues to have you change the game. I will say I'm a little nervous for this one, only because it does have a standard, kind of a standard bill, 70% corn, 81%, what is it?
21% wheat. And 9% barley.
And 9% barley. So, I mean, we're sitting pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And under 100 proof, that could play.
Sweet? You think you take the corn sweet over the wheat?
I think I...
Yeah.
Yeah.
At a lower proof.
At a lower proof, I think it's going to be a little sweet. And on the nose, I'm getting a lot of that sweetness, that caramel wood sweetness.
Initially, the nose was burny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you noticed that.
Yep.
And color-wise, I mean, it's lighter.
Oh, for a 5 year?
For a 5 year?
In the bottle, it's darker. In the pour, it's lighter. It's interesting. Yeah. If you guys, we have the man himself.
Staring us down
while we're sipping this.
So I got to be super.
We got to be on it right now.
Intellectual about this bourbon he brought us.
It does have floral notes.
Yep.
To it. I think that base level floral, more of that rose
mm-hmm. yeah.
that we talk about a lot.
Yeah, it's not, what do I want to say?
Herbaceous?
It's not herbaceous.
No.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if we're going to throw weird words, can we throw stemmy?
Yeah.
Of the rose.
Exactly. You know? It's more of like a flat floral rather than that herbaceous.
That I would put it more, floral. To go to his weird ass palate, like cut grass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like a Willet, but not as mm-hmm. pungent.
Yeah. Yep.
Willet has that weird...
Yeah.
Well, I'm not
I mean, yeah, I'm interested to see how it opens because that sweetness is definitely hitting me, and it's that caramel sweet.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and get sipping. Cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers. Salut.
We need like a rotating table.
A rotating table, yeah.
I just need one of those extenders that old people mm-hmm. use.
Holy shit. Wow. How is the... Hold up. Are you guys getting punched with that floral at the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
It stays on the... It's sitting on the tip of the tongue.
Tip of the tongue.
In the roof of your mouth, like towards mm-hmm. the front.
I mean, the evolution is wild. It's almost got like a...
Again, that ting.
Yeah, like that... Like,
that shot that you take that you eat the flower base
and
then you...
Yes.
Yeah.
That kind of has that kind of numbing, weird, mm-hmm. tingy kind of...
It's acidic, for sure.
And the weight of it is heavy. Like,
the weight of it's heavy.
It is oily, but it's a heavy...
Take current. Another drink.
Yeah.
It goes more towards the plummy...
It's not as sweet as I thought it was going to be. I'll tell you that much. Like, I'm getting a little bit of caramel and vanilla... But it's not.
Are you getting a bitter aftertaste?
It's the back end. Yeah, it's not.
It's the back end.
It's the floral and the oak on the front with a little bit of spice. Mm-hmm. Like
very little spice.
Very little spice.
But it's there.
But it's there. But that,
it almost has numbness
on the tongue is interesting.
Yeah, and it almost has like that dryness of port.
Yes.
Like that
yeah.
that overall like back of the palate port.
Mm-hmm.
dryness. And then the sweet sticks. I am intrigued.
If you kind of chew it and breathe out, you get a lot of the oak.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing is going to be what pulls forward as it stays mm-hmm. open. Is it going to be, is it the floral side that pulls even more forward? Or does, I would assume that as it evaporates, it will get sweeter.
Yeah.
Right? As the ethanol evaporates, as it stays mm-hmm. open, it should get sweeter, is my guess.
This is going to be interesting.
But it's not nearly as sweet. Is it, like, the nose is a lot sweeter than it is on the actual palate. Yes,
100%. Wow. Okay.
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's heavy, but it's light at the same time. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah.
It's like,
Yeah.
You know?
it's like the oil keeps it light on your tongue. But then it
sets heavy on the back of your tongue.
Yeah.
Going into your...
I've never experienced something like that.
And then what's that flavoring back there? It's like bitter chocolate. I don't know.
Yeah.
Kind of like a
molasses. Like a, I would say cacao.
Yeah.
Like not a chocolate not that a has chocolate, sugar. But a
cacao. Yeah. So I was going to, that's funny you said that. I was going to say it's maple syrup, but it's like actual maple from the tree.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like, or like raw honey. Have you guys ever had like raw honey?
Yeah.
Before you add any of the sweeteners to it, it just has like a, I don't know how to describe
wild
it.
Wild
like
kind of.
Like your brain wants to think it's sweet, but the texture. Yeah, it's different.
That is interesting. All right.
It is interesting.
This is going to be a cool one. Under 100, I mean, I'm down.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I can
drink two of these without being like, should I drive home?
The only problem is that we're going to be like, I could take 10. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So let's go ahead and jump into the articles for today's episode. And again, guys, just for today's episode, we're going to take it a little light. We're just going to go over some real estate article headlines that we've seen. Because, again, that's how most of you guys get your knowledge on real estate. So we want to kind of stay on top of it and just kind of talk through some stuff. So I think we're going to, the two topics that we're going to talk about are, one, where it says three great home renovations or home remodel ideas.
Three strategic home projects that can boost your home's value in 2025.
I like it. Perfect. So. All right. And then the second one.
Do you want to stay out of cost or?
What was that?
Do you want to stay at a cost or, you know, budget friendly or?
No, I just think just in general.
Throw some
just
money
pretty,
at it.
Because these are pretty interesting themes, one of which is exactly what we spent 30 minutes talking about earlier. So,
awesome. Save that one for last.
Yeah, so that's the first one. And then the second article that we're going to do is, will there be a quote-unquote Trump bump in the housing market? Three pros and cons of a Republican-controlled Congress.
Trump bump, is that like when he gets someone pregnant?
No, it's the way his back sticks out when he's standing up.
I thought it was when you do a line of cocaine off of Trump's stomach.
get a little bit of orange, you know? Get a little bit of zest while you're doing it.
No, the Trump bump is when you do a little bit of cocaine, you start doing the dance.
Oh, yeah.
Afterwards.
Yeah, he must have done a Trump bump.
Oh, usually geez. Happens about 3 o'clock in the morning.
All right. So with that being said, let's go ahead and move into the three, the three different renovations or home things that you can do.
So we'll do the one.
Yeah, we'll do that one last. Right, cool. Yeah.
So the first one is increasing your house's energy efficiency. So things like upgrading windows, adding insulation, installing smart thermostats, switching out older appliances with newer, more energy efficient ones. and basically saying that, for example, an Energy Star rated refrigerator could save up to $220 a year in utility bills. So what do you guys think about increasing home energy efficiency?
I mean, if you guys want to know what we're talking about, definitely go check out our past episodes. We have an entire episode where we talked about how to increase the energy efficiency in your home. So we can link that somewhere on the screen or in the description for you guys. But definitely go check that out. I honestly, the as I do research for the podcast and you know, kind of what topics are relevant with consumers that we can talk about for you, I see this one pop up 98% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really hear people talking about it outside of something like this,
right,
where it's a nationwide kind of article. And where I do believe that, because again, I'm all for energy efficiency, 100%. Fix your windows, deal with your doors, you know, get efficient HVAC appliances, all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I feel like it's not as big of a thing yet as it needs to be.
I want to agree with that. And I think, and I just think this is my opinion, I think because the upfront cost is more expensive than the actual savings, because with windows and all that, you know, let's say that you save $1,200 a year Well, the consumer wants to see that a month, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're doing $1,200 a year, that's saving of $100 a month, which it's substantial, but mm-hmm. like long term it is.
Yeah, well, right? And to your point, we tell people all the time to think about your mortgage payments in a monthly mindset.
Right.
So if we're telling people, hey, make this investment now to save a potential $1,200, that's a very hard thing to bite in this current market. You know, back before, yes, but in a market where we're seeing a lot of people, and you've said this before too, Oscar, that a lot of your transactions this year have been people who had to do it.
Right.
Right. And they're not in a position to just go, yeah, let me spend an extra $500 to $800 on this appliance to make it energy efficient in hopes that in 5 years I'll be able to flip it and sell it. It's going to be better.
Right.
And where, for me, I think that this is more market driven as far as like, hey, we have more availability for these kinds of things now. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it is understood by the general public enough to where this is going to be a big enough impact on your home sales. Because I know a lot of the people, and we're dealing with it right now, we have the boomer generation coming through. This is going to be the biggest dump of real estate that we've had in America's history whenever they start passing away, selling their properties. And if they don't understand the value of home energy efficiency, of even just a Nest thermostat, right? Just putting in a Nest thermostat can save you upwards of $3,000 a month by identifying holes in your AC. A year.
I was like, I got one of those.
But even something like that can save you. But when you tell them, hey, if you install this, you're going to be able to monitor it through your phone. You're going to be able to get these notifications. But yeah, I don't want to do that. I press a button on this one and it's fine.
And I've said this in the past too. I think where I saw a substantial, like, I don't want to say, I guess it was a big increase in savings was when I sold my old house. And when we moved over here, it was a bigger home. That was an older home, and the windows were updated, but it was still drafty. It was a 1961 build, old, you know, ranch bungalow in Littleton. This one was newer, and it was bigger. So I figured I was going to waste more money on heat and AC and on water. But because when we moved, our washer and dryer crapped out, so we bought new ones when we came over. So we had energy efficient washer mm-hmm. and dryers. And then we actually had to install a new furnace because that one was just crap. When all that was installed, I think I'm either broke even or saving maybe like $10, $20, $30 at my new house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's substantially bigger. But just in that aspect, I thought it was going to cost me more. And that's where I saw the biggest. I mm-hmm. couldn't tell how much of a difference it is. It's just I'm almost breaking even on a bigger home.
Yeah.
My hot take on it is the whole energy efficient side of the housing market is more of a feel good thing than a practical thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about the solar panels, right? For the most part, you're doing it not because you're saving a ton of money, especially in Colorado. You're doing it to feel good that you're doing your part for the environment. And I think that the only way that changes or starts to shift is when you look at incentives. So we look at the Energy Act and different tax credits and different things you can do, right, to save actual money. So, for example, if you want to swap out an electrical panel, there are federal programs that'll give you $2,000 or $3,000 in tax credit, right? Which, when it's a tax credit, it is off the top of your taxable income. So, I spend $2,000 upgrading my electrical panel, and I get a $3,000 tax credit. That is a tangible
mm-hmm. but again, right? It's kind of like writing stuff off, right? Yes, well, no. I get a break, but I still have to put the money up front.
You do, but the difference, if you write something off, it's not dollar for dollar. Versus the tax credit is a dollar for dollar.
It's dollar for dollar, but same concept, right?
Yeah.
Correct.
You're going to get an exact figure, which
when we want instant gratification.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. I think we'll have to transition to that. And I think in order for this to matter, outside of, to your point, Charlie, like the niche of people that read these articles, if I'm taking a buyer, and I have, right, to multiple houses and I'm showing houses, I could count on no hands how many times somebody goes, well, is this house more energy efficient than the house that we just saw? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then that's the deciding factor. That is never
once. Well, we're not, and we haven't been in that position in how long for somebody to be able to do that. I need to do it.
I have seen a lot of agents ask for utility bills as due diligence documents. Yeah. So I have seen a lot of that. Maybe that's where we're steering towards. But I have to agree 100% with what Jameson said about the solar panels, right?
Yeah.
It's more of, you know, environmental friendly, feel good than actual savings in the long run. And then, I mean, I think we should retouch that same episode because now we have a little bit more, real-time data and
I'd actually love to have somebody that sells solar panels on.
And if you are going out of business, you know? Something like Sunrun or something like that. Yeah. So whenever I get approached about that, I'm like, it's all on how you feel. It's if you're doing it for the environment and for you, 100%, just figure out how you want to pay for them. Mm-hmm. Other than that, it's going to be a hard sell if you're looking for for savings monthly or even annually and mm-hmm. how you want to store your energy.
I think it's going to be interesting moving forward to see. I think we're going to see more energy efficient advancements as far as building materials, different concretes, stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest one is insulation, right? Like if you can insulate your house via insulation or energy efficient windows, those are the two big things. And again, it's still not tangible enough, right? Unless people are sitting there going, okay, I went from a $400 a month heating and cooling bill to a $200 a month heating. That's a big deal.
Yeah,
that is. Mm-hmm. But most people just aren't looking at it.
Yeah.
And if you look at it, most of the time, those houses end up costing more anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's that fine line of it's going to cost me more for the house because it's going to be newer. It's going to be up to code and all these different things. So yeah, I'm going to save $200, but if I spend an extra $300 on my mortgage, does that really a differentiating factor for me? And I just don't think it is.
I mean, there is nothing you can really do energy efficient wise that's going to be like in your face, like wow factor status.
Other than just for marketing purposes.
Correct.
Like other than to say, look at how energy efficient we are. We have better net. Like that's how I see this. It's flashing lights. It's
correct.
Look at what we have. It's new. It's brand new.
Or unless you like happen to buy a home that someone just went,
oh yeah, all in
geek squad, and was like, mm-hmm. this house is 100%.
Yeah, if you have Tesla,
boom. And he,
if you have Tesla solar panels and then Tesla batteries charging your Tesla
all
in your garage,
and you have
with a water recapture system and a greenhouse with hydroponics, then yes, you
with
know what?
No gas,
right.
All electric mm-hmm. water heater.
But
everything.
At that point, you're toeing the line of a prepper.
Yeah,
right.
You know what I'm saying?
And someone already paid for all that up front,
exactly.
And then you're benefiting from market. You know, it drove it down. So now you have to sell it for here all day.
This is why
I'll
love,
go buy that.
This is why I love these kinds of episodes. Yeah. It's just riffing. I love it.
And I think it's like one of those you know, you watch like sports deals and they talk about a team and they go buy or sell. This person's the best, blah, blah, blah. For me, if it's, hey, buy or sell that energy efficiency is going to be a big deal in 2025, what would you do? Buy or sell? Like, do you buy that idea? Or are you like, yeah, fuck that idea. I'm going to sell it.
I'm not. I'd fuck that
sell
idea.
Sell it, right?
I'm going to sell it.
I'm going to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Yeah. And you got to think, guys, this is coming from three people who live in, like, a very energy conscious state.
Yes.
And that, again, this is where these people would be looking
exactly.
for that. And we're telling you, like, we don't see those conversations happen.
And I just got done watching Landman, so I don't know if you see that.
Oil! Ready? We're selling the idea that energy efficiency is going to be a big thing in 2025. Yeah.
I like it.
Just saying.
All right, so all right. Number two
is invest in wellness. So now this is kind of...
In wellness?
This harkens back to COVID-19. So essentially...
Before you say, are they trying to say like... putting a spa and an ice bath and like a steam room in your house? Is that
no, but
that where
I love all of those ideas.
That's what pops in my mind. If I was a reader and I saw that, I'd be like, oh.
No, so incorporating wellness features in your home could be an upgrade worth considering in 2025. The examples they give are installing upgrades like whole house water filtration, air purification systems throughout the home. That would be the two that they would say. So
like
I would also put maybe
whole
home humidification because that's a big thing in Colorado with dry air.
You know
air.
What? I have a gripe with that one.
What's
mine
the
went
title?
South and it's
invest
flooded.
In wellness.
No. What's the title of the article again?
Oh, three upgrades you can make.
Strategic home projects.
Home projects that can boost your home's value.
So air purifier. Look,
I
didn't have one in my old home or any of the lofts or apartments I lived prior to owning. I had one at this house, which was pretty cool. We kept the house about 40% humidity. It was great. I had to make it work because the prior owners, when I put in the new furnace, we got it to work. I would wake up really dry. You know, we're dry here in Colorado. Nosebleeds and stuff like that. And I would always think that was heat related. But no, the humidifier really did help with that and static and whatnot, right? And you have people who are like, oh, you got to watch out with the humidifiers, mold. And so, no, we're too freaking dry here in Colorado for that crap. It did help. Now, the way that it was installed onto the stack, it failed. So I turned it off.
Okay.
Because it did, it was a pain in the ass. So now I've got to figure that out. So they, if done right, I am a fan of humidifiers. Do we absolutely need it? I don't know about that. And wellness, yeah. I'm going to say yes, because we're so dry here.
Yeah. James and I, Oscar and I went. I want to get before I go. I want to get your I want to hear your input on it.
Yeah, give me 2 seconds.
And then air filters and whatnot. So when it comes to air filters on your furnace, you know, you're supposed to
replace it every 3 months.
Replace it every 3 months, mm-hmm. and then it comes from functionality and what you're getting overpaid, like the 3M, $15 filters every 3 months. Okay, whatever. But you talk to an HVAC guy, he's like, man, those 50-cent ones do the job better, and they're more efficient, they're better for the product. Mm-hmm. Your furnace will, it doesn't restrict it as much. So where do you go with that? And then you have the ultraviolet filters, which are super expensive. And all that is for more for pathogens, mm-hmm. you know, so you don't get sick in your home and allergies and pollens and whatnot. Yeah. I think, fact check me on that. So humidifier, yes. Filtration systems with water, again, I don't know. So air filters and water filters, I don't know. I'm not buying that.
So I am buying it.
I'm buying the
humidifier, though. I'm going to buy it, and I'm going to buy it for 2 reasons. Number one, I also think these, if you're looking at it from a, I'm selling my house, what are these features, like what buyer is it going to attract? I don't think it'll attract first-time home buyers.
I just see the add value thing in the title. That's why
so here's this is why I would say
it. Yeah.
If I'm a first-time home buyer, right, I don't necessarily have, I'm usually coming from a condo, a townhome, an apartment complex, right? There has been a massive push since COVID for just wellness, right? In general, you look at wellness influencers, you look at podcasts, you look at all these different things. People are becoming much more hyper aware of their physical well-being, okay? In Colorado specifically, we deal with 2 things. We deal with pollen and we deal with hard water. Mm-hmm. And hard water can absolutely fuck up your home plumbing. So if I'm looking at, okay, what about a water filtration system? Well, average cost nationwide to install one is only $2,000. On the high end, it's $5,400. However, I can see somebody who's owned a home and has dealt with hard water and different things going, you know what? This would actually make a difference, and I would be willing to pay in price for that house that has a whole home filtration system, strictly because they've had to deal with the calcium deposit buildups and everything like that, right? You also look at it and say, okay, who's buying that second home? A lot of time it's families, right? They want their kids to be healthy, so on and so forth. So I think same thing with the whole home air filtration system. I mean, think about this, right? What do we say? The number one reason millennials want to own a home with a backyard is what?
For their dogs.
And what do dogs do?
They shit.
Shit everywhere.
So dogs shed. And I know personally that asthma is a big thing. My mom's suffered from it for 60 years, right? And asthma is a very common problem. And in Colorado, we have pollen issues. And if you're allergic, right? If you're allergic,
I have pollen issues.
You know what that looks like, right? Mm-hmm. So I do say, you know what, if I can live in a home that I don't have to necessarily worry about pollen or the air quality or anything like that, I think that's a good thing, right?
You still have to go outside, though.
You do have to go outside, but most people spend their days inside, especially, think about it now, right? Prior to COVID versus now, what's the difference? Everybody's working from home, right? Oh. So some of the issues that they may not have experienced going into an office building that has commercial grade HVAC and everything else. It's pumping out just billions of cubic feet of air every 2 seconds, like an airplane. Now you're sitting in your home with your dog and the dandruff running through your furnace and your ducts and everything like that. I mean, I look at my house, dude, and I swear to God, like I will vacuum and 3 days later, there's just
a second carpet.
And so I have one dog now. I just have a husky.
Dealt with that.
Right. And if I've got kids that are allergic, I mean, luckily my daughter's not, but my daughter does have very, very sensitive dry skin.
Mm-hmm. That's my son too.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So if you have
that's why I miss the humidifier too.
And dry and hard water is horrible mm-hmm. For dry skin.
And I think,
right?
Is it just me or does Castle Rock have like even worse hard water?
Well, and dude, and think about it. This is what people don't realize. And I think this is why I say it's market specific, mm-hmm. right? People were not necessarily meant to live at 6,600 feet above sea level. You know what I'm saying? Like, people don't realize that, like, especially in Castle Rock, like, we're high. Mm-hmm. So having something like a whole home humidifier, whole home water filtration, and air purifier, I actually think is a much better investment mm-hmm. than the previous point, which was energy efficiency.
And that's where I'm going to – the reason I wanted you to go is because I knew that mine would be a culmination of both of yours, where I absolutely agree that it is – again, this is a buy, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to 100% I agree with this one. But I think the most beautiful element of that is – we always talk about the real estate market being an emotionally driven market. It is not like any other market in the United States.
Nope.
And to your point, Jameson, you were talking about how since COVID's happened, wellness has been on the brain more.
Yeah.
Right. We've seen more fitness influencers. We've seen more products coming out. People being more health conscious.
Now, I did build a gym.
Right.
I did build a gym in my basement.
Right. But then Oscar, you came in and you said, yeah, that there are actual health benefits. I've seen it. I've experienced it. I think that when you combine a market sentiment, an emotional sentiment, mm-hmm. with proof of performance,
yes,
100%, that is a equation for more home value.
Agreed.
And I think that is the most amazing part of this is we're seeing the influence of the people, the influence of the mindset affect the market. And I definitely do believe whether you're in Colorado, if you're in a place like New York, that's or Chicago, that's highly industrial. If you are able to say, hey, our house will keep you safe against all those pollutants, right? Even here, if you're hiking here and you go out to Roxborough Park, Carpenter's Peak hike, go do it. Beautiful hike, guys. But you can see the smog over Denver when you're up there. You can see it, right?
Hey, I'll go to Sims Landing.
Yeah. And for me, I think that in itself is a great marketability.
So that's what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. When we're saying value,
yeah.
You might not see the big monetary value, but the marketing value.
Exactly.
I would have to agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
The marketing value is definitely high.
Well, let's look at those from a cost standpoint. Okay. So if you go to a whole home humidifier, the average cost to install one of those is about $700.
Mm-hmm.
Worth it.
Totally worth it.
Average cost for a whole home water purifier, call it $2,500. So now if I want to install those two, we're at $3,200. Yeah. Now if I want to add a whole home air purifier, that ranges based on the size of the filter. But the average cost for those is about $2,700. So I'm at about $5,000 for those three wellness upgrades to my house. You don't think you're going to get your money back?
I think you could even double that.
Right?
If you market correctly, 100%.
If you market it correctly.
It's funny because it is emotional. I mean,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying. But if you market correctly and you say, hey, you know, I'm selling a 4-bedroom house. Obviously, it's not going to be a single person buying that home. It'll mm-hmm. be a family. Hey, is your family concerned with your kid's health? Mm-hmm. This home has A, B, and C.
Yep. So I need to fix the humidifier. I want it back, right?
Well,
but I haven't fixed it.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it's a humidifier. Yeah, I'm the guy that built out a whole basement because I wanted a urinal.
I was like,
I'm getting this urinal, goddammit. And I love mountains.
But yeah, so I'm buying that.
So
for sure.
in the sake of time, because I know this next one is gonna take up a little bit. We can go through it, but let's go ahead and move on to the last one. And this was first in the article, but we're talking about it last because it's just very relevant to the times right now across the country. So what is the last one that they say could help you add value?
Building an accessory dwelling units, or mm-hmm. as we will refer to it from this point on, an ADU.
Mm-hmm.
So Oscar, what's an accessory dwelling unit?
It is either attached or detached dwelling, in some counties that's different, but that you can rent out and have income from your home.
Yep. You could, or you could use it for whatever.
Yeah, for whatever. Mm-hmm. And in Colorado, most of the counties, there you could do it.
Well, and the reason I say it's pretty pertinent right now is because in Colorado, we December 18th, actually, it just went into effect.
That's today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Today. Or, yeah, sorry, it went into effect 16th.
Okay.
But that now Denver, Colorado passed a bill that basically said you are allowed, if you have space, to build an ADU between 200 and 800 square feet. And that supersedes all HOAs, that supersedes all coding. And that is a law that was just set. So now we're seeing certain places, towns around Colorado kind of adapt to that, switch it up. And that's because, again, everybody is suffering with housing. Just overall, we need more housing. We need more rental capabilities, all of that. But I think the the incredible part is we're seeing it nationwide. Yeah. New York is changing zoning. California's changing zoning. Texas has changed their zoning. We even have places like middle of the country that's slower that are changing zoning to include ADUs. And I think it's because we're seeing so much of this rental income movement of, hey, you know, I want more, but I don't want to have to sell or have to take out another 30-year mortgage.
Sure.
And I think that is a huge driving factor. Do I think that it's honestly going to help housing? No, I don't. But at the end of the day, it's a great option as a homeowner to have.
Yeah. So two things. The first is Freddie Mac did a study, right? You can find this on myhome.com. But they said that by building an ADU on your property, it increases your property's value by about 35%. Mm-hmm. It's pretty significant, right?
Yep.
The beauty of the ADUs and what you can do, and I think this is why they're popular. I agree with you. I don't think it does shit for that housing market. Mm-hmm. I just don't. You can't build enough, right?
No.
We're down on the high end, 4 million, on the low end, 2 million homes mm-hmm. short. So unless everybody gets an incentive to build said ADUs, mm-hmm. you're not going to build 3 million of them in the next 2 years.
Well, and so even I don't at think that, it's also a quality of life thing. Like, I
correct.
Don't know.
You
I
have to
know.
Find the right person yeah. who wants to live there.
Exactly. Because yes. I don't know how many people would be willing to move a family in and then have to walk through your backyard.
Correct.
To, you know, correct. Like, oh, excuse me, let me park my car to the left of your car's a little
yeah,
bit. Just to get,
it's
like,
a bit intrusive, too.
I yeah. mean,
if you have the right plot of land, it mm-hmm. may work. And even with the Lyrics over here off of Ridgegate, all their homes, the Shea homes have ADUs. Some are the basements, which I think it's cool, but you still the same parking situation. And some have just attached to the house, but just like kind of to the side.
Correct.
If you've seen them before, it'd have to be someone really close to you, or like in my case, she did something with I don't think she was a surgeon, but she worked with the hospitals and she knew a lot of traveling nurses that she could mm-hmm. rent the ADUs
yes.
out to.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So it's like you said, certain situations.
Market specific. Yeah.
Me personally. I like my privacy.
Yes.
And it's mm-hmm. and it's not so much me. If I was single, hell, I'd rent every room in my house out. But it's for my kids.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I draw the line.
It's a
my
safety
family.
Thing. Yeah.
Well, and I think the other hurdle is, yeah, it improves your value, mm-hmm. right? And it allows you to potentially get rental income. But if you look at construction costs, and you, mm-hmm. not to, I mean, we'll shout them out anyway, but you work with A to Z Builders
yep.
who have done ADUs, mm-hmm. and they're not cheap yep. to construct, mm-hmm. right? They're just not. So yep. you have to make sure that what's happening is in San Francisco and Seattle are two big examples. The purpose of the ADUs and loosening those regulations was to provide more rental accommodations for mm-hmm. people to drive rent down. But when somebody goes and says, hey, I'm going to build this ADU, it's going to cost me $700,000. I have to get
jeez.
A loan to do that at 7%, my mortgage on just that ADU or my loan payback on the ADU is $6,000 a month. Now I got to charge at least $6,000 a month in rent mm-hmm. for it to make
not
sense.
Happen.
Well,
and
happen.
Or even so, even if you're spending $125,000, you know, the offset and the and just the liability behind it, and then there are all the rules that they put in on rents mm-hmm. lately.
You I think know, the average
how much deposit you can collect, how much rents you can charge. They're stiffing that up. And when I was talking to one of my friends that were there, she's a councilwoman, great person. I was saying, you know, a lot of the rent restrictions there you're doing are affecting your everyday consumers. I get it. The big companies, you know what? Yeah, let's tighten some stuff up because they are gouging and taking advantage. But your everyday consumer that's worked their butt off to maybe acquire a rental property, you've made it just that much harder for them, and maybe even taking a loss where now their investment is a liability mm-hmm. and they need to get rid of it. And that hurts the American people.
Well, put it this way. So to build an ADU, and this is a very blanket statistic, but the average cost to build an ADU is around $300 a square foot,
mm-hmm.
right? So if I'm building a 1,000 square foot ADU, which is probably a 2-bed, 1-bath, with a living space, single level, I'm talking almost $300,000, right? We know that from a standard 30-year fixed mortgage, $300,000 is about 7%, so you're talking almost $3,100 a month, mm-hmm. right? Roughly. If I take a HELOC out of my house and I can get a 7.9%, I'm probably at $3,500 a month.
Which is insane because who's building ADUs? Average consumer, right?
Right.
Not
that's
builders,
what I'm
right?
Yeah, right.
I bet you that the builders that you know to construct a home, they're probably looking at $260 to $275 a square foot to build out the house. Mm-hmm. And I tell you that because I just got done doing a performa for Sunnyside. So I know that. And I interviewed three different investors.
What kind of house was it?
It was a 15-unit townhome complex.
That's different.
What I'm saying.
Single family, new construction, single family with a custom home builder is about $600 a square foot.
We're looking at rest.
We talked to Art and them. They're building them in Denver.
Last quote.
So again, it's depending on who you talk to because your average consumer maybe.
$300 to $350 Mm-hmm. That was the last quote I saw.
I guess I should say that's custom home.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're still building everything they're doing down in Denver is custom.
And well,
they're
and
not
I think,
big builders.
I think
so.
Overall,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
For the average consumer, or you're going with a builder, you're going to pay a premium.
Correct.
Because your builders are probably building out for under 300 a square foot.
Yeah.
Custom but that, or not. That means that you're now, I'm constructing an 80.
So it doesn't make sense for your average consumer.
Right. It's $3,500 a month. Mm-hmm. That doesn't lower rent when the average rent for a $1,000 apartment in Denver is $2,200 a month. Why would I go live in an ADU? Right, so that's why
it
I don't
be a cool just ass ADU.
The definition of throwing shit at a wall and hoping it sticks.
Well, right, exactly. I don't think I'm not buying that it actually. But I am buying that it will.
But there's a big push still.
Well, but here's the deal. So the article was, what can you do to increase your home's value? I think the ADU value is not from a rental standpoint and getting income. It is because you've got people that are locked into 3%, 4%, and 5% interest rates. That would love to sell their house and upgrade to a larger home and cannot at 7%. So instead, they can go through and they can build an ADU in a couple of different ways and add livable, usable square footage mm-hmm. to their home.
Absolutely.
He said, he shed, she shed, man cave, golf simulator,
well, and
recreation room for the kids.
That's
whatever
the point,
outdoor covered space.
That's the point I was going to bring up.
Yes.
Is exactly that. Is I know from the last photo video shoot that I did with them, which was within the last week, they finished an addition, right? And talking to the owner, that's the exact reason why she did it. She's been in the house. They own the house outright. They didn't want to move, get into a new mortgage, but they wanted more space because you know their parents are about to pass, and they're the ones that host for the holidays. But guess what? They won't have the room to host for the holidays once they have to. So they took the opportunity to build on this addition in order to add more square footage. It's exactly what you're talking about. And I think until we see a point where it's worth it for people to get into these higher mortgage rates, that's what we're going to see more of is these ADUs, these additions being built.
Yeah. So the addition is great. Because I know a lot of people that actually own, they acquired their parents' home in North Denver in the Highlands. And they needed, I mean, it was a bungalow, a small house. They scraped them because they owned it free and clear and just built a custom home, $400K. Now they have this $1 million home, you know, because of the area. So, but again, to piggyback on your throwing shit at the wall and see if it works, even if you have all that, say you have a basement, you can't do it because of the restrictions on the ADU. In Adams County, you could only build out or rent out an ADU that is 40% of your livable above ground square footage or up to X amount of square feet of what the house is.
It's
so let's say that you do just cut a door so someone can have access from the outside and block this one up. If the square footage is too much, then you got to narrow it and then make this store.
Yeah.
It's a pain in the ass.
It's literally one of the things where it was like, the way that I see it, it's that fire burning, people running around going, what can we do to fix it? What can we do to fix it? Build more. How do we build more? ADU, add on to it. Boom. But then it goes, hey, well, your coding and your zoning isn't up to par with that. Your rules and regulations aren't up to par with that. The income, you're not even looking at the rental market. And I know because Alicia works in rentals. It's not good right now.
No. Shit.
They're hurting.
Just
so you're going to add more rental inventory? It just doesn't make sense.
Okay, so we're 2024. I think it was last year, might have been the year before, check me if you want. There were still places in the United States that had paper documentation of zoning.
Yeah.
So there's a company right now going in and putting it digital.
Mm-hmm.
Barely in 2024. That's some shit that should have been done in the early 2000s.
Yep.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And they're barely making it accessible. So you could go, Hewell, Colorado, okay, here's zoning.
It'll be interesting.
You still have to go to some counties and go.
Yeah.
pull out paper.
Yeah. The only time it's going to work is if you incentivize.
That's what I said from the beginning. Yeah. How are we going to get rid of this? We got to incentivize who? The builders or the consumers to do it or release some funds for it because all these band-aids or shit on the wall isn't working. Yeah.
Yeah. But bottom line, I do think that they can add value
as
a flex space for your home.
Absolutely. Look, you're just saying that because you want to add value of building a simulator somewhere and you want your wife to back you on this.
Just saying.
It incentivizes your agenda, which I'm going to have to say that I'm going to have to piggyback on your thing and just maybe add to it because I really want you to do it because then I want to go.
Exactly. And if I'm looking at multiple houses and one of them has a detached man cave and the other one doesn't and they're the same price, I'm going to probably bid higher and more for that house than I am for the one that doesn't have that.
Well, I want to ask you guys because we are at the 50-minute mark.
Okay.
So as our listeners know, we try and keep it concise for you guys, but we're passionate about this, and we tend to go a little long. So do you guys want to do a fire round on the Trump article?
Sure.
All right.
Always.
Well, so here's what we're going to do. So
I'll
need a few seconds.
Okay. So this next article is pros and cons if we're going to see a Trump bump in the housing market. All right. Let's go ahead. Let's list both the pros and the cons, and then we'll spitfire it.
All right. Pro number one, housing prices will continue to rise.
Okay. That... probably.
I think that's regardless of if Trump was president, but yes.
Agreed?
Agree.
Same? Okay. Con, potential first-time home buyers may have to wait longer.
I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah. I mean,
I do.
With that, it's the workforce, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Pay needs to catch up.
Pay needs to catch
and
up.
That's not going to happen anytime soon.
Pay needs to catch up. And
if the economy gets harder... As some are speculating, it's going to be harder for first-time home buyers, especially in places like Colorado, where Jameson just said it. At interest rates, a $300,000 home, you're paying $3,100 a month, close to. That's very hard for a first-time home buyer. Speaking as somebody who is going to be a first-time home buyer,
townhome condo, we're on contract 391, HOA, everything $2,600.
That's beautiful.
There you go.
I think I could swing that.
Yeah, it's. $2,600
It's hefty.
Mm-hmm. You know?
There's back three. In the day. When it comes to potential first time home buyers having to wait longer, that means that affordability has to come in line, yep. right? Mm-hmm. And there's three things we talk about this all the time that determine affordability: wage growth, home prices, interest rates. Of those three, realistically, there's only one thing that any administration can control, and that's inventory. Mm-hmm. And the way they do that is deregulation and making it easier to build more faster. Because wages, you can't do much. And interest rates, we don't really control because it's based on the market. So
interesting.
Will they? No.
I love how the pro was. It's basically like, hey, homeowners, you're going to do great. The con is, hey, if you're looking to get a home, fuck you.
It's haves versus have-nots.
Yeah, that's literally it's great. It's great. All right.
So here's pro number two. Fewer regulations and faster building. If Trump rolls back housing regulations, as he did during his first term, it could lower construction costs and speed up home building, which may help with the inventory shortage.
Yeah, so what you just said is we're going to get rid of build quality so we can build more.
But, you know, and that's not even the biggest thing. So, you know my stance. I swing more to the right. Not going to happen, and I'll tell you why. These tariffs and all the tax stuff, if that's going to happen, it's going to roll onto the consumers and the building material is going to be more expensive. Not going to happen.
Yep.
I think
so. They got to figure that out.
Yeah.
And again, I'm just
rolling
saying
back regulations. I'm fine with.
Yes, but that's something that has to be done regardless.
No, I understand that, and I don't think it'll sacrifice build quality, because if you move into a Schmear Schmorton home, like the build quality already sucks.
But
right?
okay, but when
but
did
the
that,
regulations? No, no, no. But the regulations aren't necessarily the build quality. It's more of the length of time it takes to get a permit. And to get all of these, go through all this red tape to develop a undeveloped parcel of land. That's where the problem is, right? Because trying to get development, the amount of red tape you have to go through right now to start, and we could talk to Ari about that, right? To start building something on vacant land, unimproved or improved.
18 months sometimes.
Is insane.
Not only that, rezoning. I mean, I get it. I am in school. I could give two shits about history. I didn't like it. I was math, science, let's go all day. Now, as an adult, I'm like, whoa, you know, history is very valuable, you know. There's a lot of areas in town that are deemed historic.
Yes.
And I get that, and I do want to preserve a lot of that. There was a, and I don't know if they're still around, and I'm not dogging them out or not, but I went viral on a piece of land that I had down in by where the Pepsi bottling company down in Rhino. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Rhino. So there was a community that actually was trying to help my client out. It was called Keep Rhino Wild, and they were preserving her house. Her house, her grandfather built it in 18-something with his two bare hands. That house had minimal electric, still had an outhouse, minimal plumbing. They kept it since in the family, and it was just in the middle of industrial. And one of the big investor guys there, he wanted to push her out. He had bought all the property around her on tax liens, and she was the only one that split in half, so he couldn't do with anything else. There was only two residents left, hers and this other one that he was just going to condemn. He renovated to make it a halfway house to push her out.
Damn.
Still couldn't push her out. I got involved. I tried to get her the most, and she's like, I don't want to sell to that gentleman. I was like, look, as a real estate agent, I can't, but I'll let you know who's buying, so you know you get to decide that. They tore us apart because she wanted a whole bunch, and she was such a sweet lady. She actually still lives a block down. Long story short, this guy ended up buying it through he put it under contract with a different agent and then sold the LLC and ended up buying it and just developing where I think it's a medical center now.
And people wonder why there's a low sentiment around CEOs and business people.
With that said, people get pissed with stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. But there's certain areas where we're like, look, this is prime. Let's just develop it. Maybe keep it somewhat historic, but let's advance. There's mm-hmm. a way. Let's find that sweet spot of advancement and maybe build some more people can live, and then keep it historic too. I mean, we need to open up our eyes and minds to that.
My only hope is that it goes down that route. I don't want there to be lesser regulation around quality and
it's
and
not
safety.
That's what I'm saying. It's not the quality and safety regulations. It's the pulling the permits and actually developing. Those are the regulations.
Timelines. And that's timeline.
Those are the regulations that this article is talking about, because they want to just get rid of some bureaucratic red tape.
Because
let me develop this. That's what I want to do.
Because where I'm super like offended and like protective is wildlife.
Yes.
Especially here. My outdoor space.
100% agree.
Don't fuck with my mountains.
Especially out here.
No, I mean, I love it, right?
But when it's in city, I'm like...
But if you can marry those two,
I'd rather knock down the Brown Palace and go mess around with my wildlife.
No, 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 but what I'm
and
saying is...
the Brown Palace is historic big time, and I love the Brown Palace.
And maybe we'll do a... I think we should do a podcast on this. The way other countries have married... Mm-hmm. The idea, Singapore is the first thing that comes to mind, married the idea of a dense population while maintaining nature and the outdoors. They have done a phenomenal job. Vertical gardens, trees everywhere, dedicated parks.
You posted about it on your story.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yes. They tried it. Denver tried it, but they got the wool. They got the rug pulled out from under them on that one.
What?
That the building that
it's, they're still trying.
They're still trying, but they sold it as this green.
Well, the problem
stackable
is, listen, man. The problem is you're trying to build a green oasis at 5,300 feet above sea level in a high desert. Like it's gonna, you might as well just plant fucking palm trees.
Yeah, I mean that's what Colorado suffers. I mean, go to the Midwest. Like my wife's family's from the Midwest.
Yeah, you build that in Charlotte, North Carolina. Yeah, you don't have that fucking.
That
problem.
Dirt, it's so rich. You could throw a pit and it's gonna grow a tree. Here,
dude, look at Castle Rock. What grows in Castle Rock?
You can't even bake bread.
Nothing grows in Castle Rock
here in Colorado.
So that was second pro?
Yep.
Second con.
All right. No. Oh, second con.
Rising. Oh, yeah. Singapore, because I've been there so much.
We got to do this quick.
What the hell are you guys talking about?
Because I can go on forever on this. Rising mortgage rates. You and I talked about this off camera. Is a con.
Yeah.
Okay. Of a Republican-driven Congress. Why?
There's a lot of factors behind it. Mm-hmm. I think we're not going to drop where we thought we were, but I think we're going to maintain and hopefully in the sixes. I think high fives and sixes, I think we're going to be there and maintain there until we figure something out.
We have... too much of a discrepancy in, it's a non-reality of how we feel in the public of spending and how much we're earning and how expensive things are and what the economy is actually doing on a statistical number-based level. And what I mean by that is, talk about the treasury bonds. When we see the bonds going up, it's an inverse relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So that tells us that the economy is doing good.
Yes.
So that's where it's, and we just had another bump, right? So, I don't know. It's. I do think that mortgage rates are going to continue to stay high
mm-hmm.
because we are doing good, and that's just what it is.
Yeah, but there's still institutes that. I mean, I'm getting my people 6% right now. Yeah.
That's still high.
A lot of the lenders are doing sevens.
Yeah, it's relative to the prices though.
Right.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. If we were
high fives and sixes.
If you said, hey, if I can get you a high five six again in Kansas, Missouri, you know, but these lower markets, yeah, absolutely.
So it's subjective, right?
Yeah.
Because
back in my day,
dude, 6% is a great rate.
Oh, it is.
It is.
5.5 is a great rate, but home prices just rocketed.
Not only did home prices rocket, but what's lagging behind home prices? Wage growth.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem, right? Yep. It's just expendable income. Here's my hot take on this. Rising mortgage rates. Yes, I think rates are going to stay high. I think we'll be mid to high sixes for the rest of the year if the policies that the incoming administration come to fruition, for the simple fact that if you look at tax reductions, deregulation, that usually means a hot economy. And if it's a hot economy, that means people invest in the stock market and they're not investing in the bond market. And if they're not investing in the bond market, those interest rates will stay high to attract people to invest in the bond market, which means mortgage rates are going to stay high. So yes, I think it is a con.
Yeah.
I think, and I hate to say this because normally when you face a recession, you need job loss, but our job market's high. The problem is, the Occam's razor is if rates stay high, we should start to see eventually home prices coming down a little bit, or at least leveling out.
Yeah.
Right.
We're definitely not going to be in the sevens or even
I don't think it's going to go
double figure.
No.
I don't think it's going to skyrocket.
We'll be in the mid to high sixes.
You know,
I think.
I'm talking about your value. Your annual year over end. Seven, eight.
No,
I think we're looking more of a normalized like three to five.
Yes. Yeah.
I agree.
You know, increase, which is good.
I agree.
I rather have the option to buy a product than to save money on all products and make more money.
Yeah.
That's just my school of thought. But I agree with the fact that when the economy and the stock market is doing great, interest rates are usually stay high. There's some correlation, and there's also the...
Well, and this wouldn't matter, honestly, if COVID never happened.
Oh, yeah.
This wouldn't matter. Right? The problem is we're comparing apples to oranges.
There's also... And they did it back in 2000... What was that? 9, 10. So there's going to be portfolio products, right? Which... the banks get to do what the hell they want.
Mm-hmm. Those arms aren't looking too great right now.
No. I mean, the 5-6 arm's still at a 5.
Right, but at this point, you should have been able to refi out of it.
No, but
that's what everybody's saying.
Yeah.
That's all.
You're still 3-4 years out.
Yeah.
And worst case, now you're getting a 6. So it's better than getting that 7.
Yeah.
All right. You know?
Next one. We still got to get the Burma review in here, and we're
pro number three. More disposable income will make housing prices cheaper or more affordable because people have more money in their pocket for down payments.
Wait.
More disposable income will give people more money for down payments to make housing more attainable.
I want to know where they're getting the thought that there's going to be more disposable income.
Help. Think about this one.
Tax cuts.
More. Disposable income.
So here, let me.
What I'm thinking is it's going to give more. You know what? And it comes down to home prices. I mean, I don't think it's.
I haven't seen one bit of statistical evidence that shows. Again, statistical evidence. This is not emotional. That shows that the people who need the help most to buy homes are going to be benefited by this tax plan that is coming into play. That's it.
I believe you.
That's all I'm going to say. And again, guys, I want to tell you, I am sitting here.
But it goes back to political stuff.
But I'm because hopeful. I wanted to help.
I said a couple of things prior to this.
Mm-hmm.
I struggled the last 3 years in business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I did. That administration did shit for me.
Mm-hmm.
Not to get political, but they didn't do anything for me. And right now, I'd rather put food in my kids' mouth than any other investment or anything else.
Here's my
four more years of the past. I'm just saying, going in, let's see what it does.
Yeah, no,
we need to stimulate it somehow.
Again, I'm hopeful.
If
I want to see
it. Let's wreck it, but let's do something different because it didn't work.
All I know is, at the face value, it may, like, business-wise, yes, but my ETFs, my stocks, my investments over the last 4 years have almost doubled through this, presidency, this one. And again, I've seen the hurt personally from the tax differences. Like, I remember sitting down and I was so excited that
okay,
I was finally going to make.
Your investment did great.
Yes.
But what about the people for the workforce and don't have those investments that's just working on what they make?
That's what I mean, right? But again, now we're talking, if it's referencing the taxes, right? Everything that I'm seeing that, again, statistical, like number driven, anybody below $100,000 a year is going to be hurt. They're going to have to spend more on their taxes. Now, does that mean that their monthly income is different? It's, we're looking at $750 below $20,000, $1,200 between...
$750 what?
$750 more on your taxes. Yeah.
Okay.
More.
Still.
If you make it. And then...
Minimal if I'm making more money.
Right. Again,
I'd rather make more money than save money.
I'm hoping to see it. I want to see it.
Because, again, looking at it from the right, your investment's doing great. So... I should be of the mindset of, hey, hell yeah, keep people renting because my investments are going to do great because that's what that administration did.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have rentals, hell yeah, I wanted the administration to keep me because it keeps people in my properties and I'm making money, right? But I'm talking about the day-to-day working class Americans that need to make more money and have the opportunity to, all right, if that's going to cost me an extra $3, because that's what it's going to boil down to, right? $700 divided by 12. That's what you're boiling down to the tax hike. But I can say, well, I'm not going to buy that fucking bourbon anymore. I'm going to buy this bourbon that's a little bit cheaper. That's the option, but I'm going to make $2 to $3 more an hour. So now I'm making more money and have the option.
Right? I'm hopeful.
So
that's,
again,
that's all I'm going to say.
I could play a devil's advocate on both sides because I am a registered independent. But I see it from different eyes because... Coming from what you just said, hell yes, keep people renting. I'm going to make money in my investments. I'd rather not for my job because I want the general public and American people to make more money because then they're going to buy some houses. And at the same time, why not make more money and have the option whether you want to spend on that product or not? If I don't ever see another avocado from Mexico, fucking know how I feel about avocado toast, I just won't buy no more avocados.
Sorry, Jim, you're stewing.
So I'm a registered cynic. And so this is my problem.
I thought you were a registered alcoholic.
That too.
That's how you're a
golfaholic.
My problem is all of these pros and cons, realistically, like there is a fundamental issue that nobody wants to fucking talk about. And I think it's because nobody has an answer to it.
Yeah.
So the pro was more disposable income. And this is verbatim. And this is one from founder and broker at Savvy Buyers Realty. Never fucking heard of it, but apparently he's an expert. I think we will see a small bump in housing due to the Trump administration taking office, and it will likely be from a strengthening economy rather than any other factors. Okay? That's sentence one. In the preceding sentence, or in the next sentence, if he's able to implement policies that will help bring interest rates down, it will certainly help to increase home buying activity. Problem number one.
Negate it.
President doesn't fucking control interest rates when it comes to mortgages. That's it, right? Number two, those two are very different things because if the economy is hot, interest rates do not come down.
That's what I said. Just negated.
This is a person. The same person who is a founder and owner at Savvy Buyers Realty said two contradicting things. Number three, they are expecting economic growth with his policies and the possibility of changes in household tax rate, which could help make houses more affordable.
No.
Okay? So here's the thing. None of that matters because at the end of the day, the problem is fucking inventory.
Well, it's just, yes.
That is it.
Affordability.
That is it.
And everything is fixed. What was the term they used?
That's it. But I
hold
think
on. What was the term they used?
With what?
With being able to buy a home.
Yeah, they literally said helps make houses more affordable because of household
affordability
tax
doesn't come from fucking taxes or anything else. They're expensive.
Well, and again,
and
right
they're expensive
that,
to own unless
said,
you have cash.
If Americans
none of that tax shit
if
matters.
Americans have more money in their bank accounts, they will have more to invest in real estate.
No,
but if I get more people to invest in real estate with a limited supply,
then the home prices
go up. That's what I'm saying. Like, it, to me,
it has nothing to do with any of that reason, shit.
But I think
zoning and incentives, I think correct. That's where
I think the reason that people keep bringing this up and they don't want to talk about the supply problem is because there is not a clear and easy to understand solution.
It's not even so that. There's just so
we
much.
We just negate it. That's
there's
it.
There's just so much in invested in money and power and whatnot for zoning and all this other bullshit, right? Because if we incentivize the builders, all right, so you make a living off building. And I'm like, hey, Mr. Amros and Mr. Sardelli, I need you to buy more affordable housing. I'm literally telling you, I need you to make less money so people can afford. Dude, this is what you do for a living. You know?
It's counterproductive.
But if I say, hey, you guys, I'm going to give you either some breaks or,
which
you know
what,
I'm going to buy half of the material and spend some dollars, and it's not going to cost you any less. You can still make money. Then you'd be like, all right, I could do that. It's going to be, it's an easier build. You make the same amount of money, and then I got some skin in the game. You are more likely to build that out, and that's where we sit right now.
Which is why con number three and the last one is so funny because it's so contradictory. Increased prices from labor shortages and tariffs on building materials will cause home prices to go up.
Okay, I'm going to give the article some credit. I'm going to give the article some credit. Okay. The title was How a Republican-Led Congress can affect the housing market. I will say that based on the title, the article is in conjunction because they're talking about Republicans having control of Congress and being able to affect laws and regulations that move this. I'll give them that credibility. But the fact that we just went through all of those pros and cons, and the last con is literally talking about home prices raising due to the cost of building materials and just in general, like, oh yeah, by the way, everything.
Well, and here's
homes are going to get more expensive.
Here's my bottom line and my hot take. Okay,
hold on, before I forget, because you get to, you remember stuff better than I do, so again, I didn't swing more right, but I'm going to have to agree with the fact that immigration and taxes will increase home prices because the taxes are going to make materials go up, and the immigration is going to make the work, it's going to be more expensive labor-wise.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. But with the same sentence, I'm going to say, because I said I could have easily sped this up. Hell no. Because at the beginning, when we did the whole political one, the Dems had Band-Aid bullshit and throw shit at the wall to fix it. The Republicans had nothing. And they still have nothing. The Republicans nothing to do with nothing that could fix or anything that's going to benefit the housing market. Nothing. Now, will it trickle into the housing market? Yes. Through taxes and all this other bullshit, whether it goes up and down or whatever, it'll trickle in. But nothing specifies this is what we're going to do for real estate and the housing market. And that's pretty fucking crazy because the current administration, the president is an ambassador in a real estate
mogul,
whatever the hell you want to call it.
Mogul.
So, but the other administration had nothing either. So none of them had anything. The other administration, I'd be saying the same thing. This administration, I say the same thing. They have nothing. So with their decisions, we'll see how it trickles into real estate. There's nothing correlated that would say this administration is going to help real estate. Nothing, nothing. Now, will it, for some reason, serendipity happens and it does? Maybe.
I hope so.
But there is nothing. They had nothing planned, and they went in with nothing. Mm-hmm. At least the Dems had some shit to Band-Aid, and I don't think it would have happened anyway, but at least put some effort in it. This administration has absolutely nothing for you. I'm just sorry. We'll see whether their options and choices affected or not.
I like the headline is, it's increased prices from labor shortages. Okay. Where are they getting labor shortages on an incoming administration?
Deportation.
But they can't say that.
Yeah.
There is no world where you can take away the labor that builds houses, replace it with more expensive labor, and then tax the products that are needed to build said houses
and gain
higher and lower home prices. Like,
does
there
it work?
Is not an alternate Spider-Verse universe that math
I appreciate
fucking
that.
Works.
I appreciate that.
Okay?
It
There's
doesn't.
Just not.
It
you doesn't. Could. You could ask Dr. Strange. He'll tell you the same thing, right? I've looked at
he
all
He can
the,
see all one.
He's
all
like, hold on. Let me look through
in
this.
In any universe that the cost of material rises and the cost of labor rises, builders aren't going to go, I'm going to take those two factors and somehow make these homes cheaper unless they just have this altruistic takeover of, you know what? Fuck it.
Check it out.
I'm going to do my shit for
free. I just called a lot of my connections. I have some that are better, but for the case of this argument, I'm trying to negotiate a water heater. 15 years ago, water heater, $700, installed, out the door. I'm gone. The cheapest I could find with my connections, $2,000.
Yeah.
I had a few say $4,500. For a fucking water heater, what do you, what the fuck? I'm sorry, crazy. I'm going to cuss right now.
It's crazy.
$700 to $4,000 in the matter of, I think I could have still got.
Dude, look at AC units are the same thing, right?
Well, exactly.
$10,000.
$10,000 for
my townhome off of 40th. And it was her relative. I'm sorry, I'm not talking stuff because I love both of you. The relative too. Look, adore that dude. But it was his cost, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. It was $10,000 to replace the whole HVAC system. Furnace, AC, and everything else. It's expensive now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is expensive. So to piggyback on what you just said, fuck no, it doesn't work. You have the more expensive labor. It just doesn't make no fucking sense. I don't care how educated you're not.
I love it.
If the labor is more expensive and the material is more expensive, guess what? No savings.
If we were streaming,
listen, I'm not trying. I don't
say no fucking savings.
I don't. If we were streaming, I don't want to be.
Hey, Chad, can you clip that?
Yeah, I don't want to be racist, right? But there ain't no way that Connor and Philip are going to build a house cheaper than Jose and his buddy Juan.
You know what?
Right?
I'm just going to say that Jose and Juan are still not going to build that shit because. I kind of know a Connor that's Mexican and a Jose that's not.
But what I'm saying is Connor's going to want 4 lunch breaks, catered meals, benefits.
401k.
Like 401k matching.
Air respirator.
Right? Versus Juan Jose, like, you know what? We're trying to feed our fucking families. So, yeah, we're still going to want to be paid our worth, but we're going to get the fucking job done.
And one's going to want a respirator. The other one's going to want one of those do-rags just to put over his face so it doesn't cough.
Oh man!
I can't work in the construction without an N95 mask.
The perfect ending.
to the chill
it's reality. Holiday episode. No, I love it.
It's fucking reality. Sorry, I'm not going to sugarcoat shit. It's fucking reality. Absolutely.
And the reason I say it's been a beautiful, you know, cherry on top for this is because as you go into the holidays, you're going to have these conversations with your family members.
Relatives are going to be stupid on both sides.
You're going to talk about it. So I'm glad that
I'm hyped for my Christmas dinner. I'll tell you what.
But that.
It was my Thanksgiving.
Said,
my Christmas is going to be chill.
With that being said, let's move into the... Oh, actually, no. One Rock takeaways.
Yes.
We got to do One Rock takeaways. But let's keep it concise. We're teetering on their attention here.
All right. I'm going to keep it concise.
All right. Go.
All right. My conciseness is housing market-wise, home prices are going to be more expensive over the next year. Get on the train early. And in order to get on the train early, plan accordingly. Put things in place now to put you in a position to purchase, invest in real estate in 2025 because that train is not going to slow down. Get on it now.
I'm with Jameson on that one. Start talking to a lender right now if you think that you're ready and you can move in 2025. Start talking to a lender right now. Get your savings plan. Get your payment plans going. Understand where your finances sit and be ready.
Okay. I'm going to go off the rail. Throw the caveat is that when I use the word bitches, I mean government, I'm going to quote the late Junior Mafia, fuck bitches, make money. See what benefits you, make a plan for it. Who cares what the government says? You're going to buy when it's time for you to buy. The administration now has no plan. The administration that could have been, shitty plan. You make your choices. Go make a difference in your life. Fuck everything else.
And when you're doing that, drink some bourbon and drink responsibly. And on that note, let's move into the bourbon review for today's
episode.
What
was your One Rock takeaway?
Are we going to edit bitches take money?
No, that's staying in there.
Oh,
baby.
Shit.
That's going to be in there. Mine was the same exact thing that you said.
Oh, okay.
Prepare.
Yeah. Prepare.
Just talk to a lender. Right, prepare. Cool.
Can we have the attorney? When I said bitches, I didn't mean females or any women.
The blanket statement of bitches.
I said government. And I'm not talking shit about the government. I'm just saying deal with your life.
Fuck
deal
talk
with
your shit life. About the government. You're an American. You have the right to talk shit about the government.
I feel
government.
Like Oscar had some suppressed rage today.
I love it.
Right?
I love it. Perfect. All right. So on today's episode, we've been sipping and drinking the Stone Street Bourbon Whiskey. They are a company out of Bardstown, Kentucky. And this is their first to market. 5-year, 90-some proof Kentucky bourbon. 70% corn.
94 proof.
94. 94 proof, excuse me. 70% corn, 20.
I got it right here.
21% wheat, 9% barley.
7, 21, and 9.
Yep. On the back. I'm gonna be honest with you guys. This did exactly what I thought it was gonna do.
So remember what I said in the beginning? Mm-hmm. Either the sweet's gonna come forward mm-hmm. or the floral. Mm-hmm. It was 100% the sweet.
Yep. 100%.
Yep.
This literally morphed into almost a dessert bourbon.
Yes, and
almost that's vanilla caramel.
Yes, and I think what I think that what they're going for, the market that they're in, being the horse company that they are, branding, you know, next to Kentucky Derby, I think that this is a beautiful bourbon to sip outside on a sunny day, watching a horse race or anything. Absolutely. I don't think that this is one that would hold up against no. against other bourbons.
You know, if I had to compare it to the OG of the bourbons of Kentucky Derby, Rufford Reserve, mm-hmm. They're just so dialed into the old school mash bill of what yeah. bourbon should taste like. So mm-hmm. the old guys are chewing the fat, just talking horses. May not like this, but it's a good bourbon.
All right, so I'm looking right now, and we're looking average.
A bourbon in the pursuit of victory.
Average price right now, we're looking between 60 and 75 for this on retail, just so you guys know. Now, as we do our rock rating, guys, as you know, our rock rating is on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the better, 10 being the worst, because the more rocks you put in a bourbon, usually the worse that bourbon is. And so as we move into it, I do think that for where it's coming from, what it is, it would play well in its own space. I think when you take it to market and you're looking at that $60 to $70 price point, I think that this will get beat out by other bourbons that are stapled, that people know. I don't think that if somebody were to grab this, a bourbon drinker were to grab this off the shelf for that amount, I don't think that they'd go back for this bottle. I'm more of a sweet palate, but again, I think that this went too sweet. I think if it leaned a little bit heavier on the floral notes, then it would lend itself wonderfully to cocktails. But like, I wouldn't make an old fashioned with this. I wouldn't make a mint julep with this because it sits so sweet.
Oh, mint julep would have.
Yeah, it would just blow you away. Yeah. It would be good for a Kentucky Derby,
yeah.
but not just, hey, let me come here to the Rouge, sit mm-hmm. down, have a sip, or really feel like I'm involved in the bourbon, drinking real bourbon. So I think for me, and I hate to be mean about it, but I think I'm going to give this one a 4.5 because they lean on the complexity of it, and it was there, but that opening, that sitting, and I'm saying that now, I'm going to pick up JC's glass because I want to see what his glass is like, but, you know, just even the nose, it's just the burn is gone, and it's just candy caramel. Like, and I don't no me gusta. So I'm gonna
said no me gusta.
I'm gonna sit at 4.5, 4.7 on this one.
Dang.
I'm gonna grab JC's glass.
So I thought you were gonna rate it better than me. I'm just being a little. I guess I'm being nice. I gave it before you even said anything. I wrote it down. I give it a 4. Just because it's
damn it, I want to get a tablet now.
I wanted to write it down before you said anything.
I want to do that. I want to
sign. Give it a 4. I'm gonna give it a 4 because you know what? The drinkability is good.
The ratio of lines on the floor is horrible, by the way.
I was gonna say, if you're wishing on Oscar,
it's
just
almost like a hashtag.
Head. It's perfect.
I've been having
now. I don't know.
It looks like a hammered person trying to draw a field goal.
So the drinkability is good. It's not a bad bourbon. It is not. It is not. There's nothing that I can say it's gross about it. Mm-hmm. There's no. Put it this way. It lacks more than it. It lacks a lot to be great, but there's nothing bad for it. I mean, it's not nasty. It drinkability's there. It's good. I can't say it's bitter. It's nasty. There's this. There's that. The proofing for what it is. You know, a Jack Daniel's what 90 proof,
yeah.
something like
yeah.
that. But you know what you're getting.
Hold on. Now that you said that, just take the JC sip. I need you to take the sip.
Nothing in cherries.
Yeah, I need you to take the sip.
Yeah. All right. I'm go with the 5.
Let me see. Yeah. It just doesn't. JC's. It's lost everything.
Yeah. I was gonna say it lost everything that I had. I just have a fresh pour, so we're gonna go ahead and go with a solid 5.
Solid 5.
It's not a bad bourbon.
No.
It is very not.
Why didn't I bring my tablet to
it? That's what I'm saying. I want to do it now.
It's not a bad bourbon. Well, it's not bourbon. At least 51% corn. So it is there.
Mm-hmm.
It's heavy on the corn, and you would think it's a little more harsh, a little more in depth. You know, it's not. I would say it lends itself in the drinkability of a weeded without all the weeded flavor.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Mm. So it's very muted for what it is.
And I will say every
it's
time
not
it's
bad,
funny.
It's just not great.
We have the bartender here is extremely knowledgeable, and he hit me with something last week, and it did give me a little bit more perspective. But he said, you know, I don't know a lot of bourbon drinkers who are going to let it sit, right? But at the same time, I think that there's something to be said, and I think it was the Heaven Hill grain to glass that really brought it to fruition for me. There's something to be said for a bourbon that you can leave open. You can leave open in 100%. A diameter of a glass like
the
this.
The guy from Buffalo Trace said that you open a bottle of bourbon,
mm-hmm.
and if you're drinking it with people you care for, that bottle of bourbon does not get corked. It yep. stays open mm-hmm. until the drinking's done or the bottle is done.
And I think this one just falls too much. So, James, I'm going to step back. What are you thinking?
I mean, I feel bad.
This is our job. Don't feel bad.
6.5.
Whoa.
This?
Yeah. Here's why. I agree with both of you.
I'm kind of more of the rustic, and you guys are.
Well,
guys are
no, only
today.
Here's why.
I'm getting soft in my age.
So I have no problem with a bourbon as it opens getting sweeter.
Yeah.
I really don't, right? But the good bourbons will get sweeter while maintaining that complexity.
Well, that's mm-hmm. what I'm saying. If you get sweeter and crappy, it sucks. If you get sweeter but you're still there.
Yeah.
But I also think.
Okay. I get what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I compare this, honestly, to like a Basil Hayden.
I was just
yes.
going to say that.
Legit, yes.
Right? Holy shit.
Like,
okay.
It's a like Basil Hayden toasted
mm-hmm.
for $59. Like, if you're a beginner bourbon drinker, 100%. It's going to hit your palate because it's not hard
but
to drink.
But they're also 80%.
Exactly. Between so the fact that this is 47 or 94 proof, right? I
expected
expect
a little bit more.
A little bit more. And I think anytime you have a bourbon that loses every characteristic but that sweet palate.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if this was $40,
yeah, 45,
it would probably
50,
change
yeah.
my rating.
Mm-hmm.
But at 70, what do you say, between 60 and 80 bucks,
60
right?
to 75. Yeah.
Right. So at $75, I mean, dude, I would take
Jefferson
Ocean.
If you've been drinking bourbon for over 2-3 years and you have a positive review on just a regular Basil Hayden, usually any real bourbon drinker, whiskey, scotch, whatever, will grab a Basil Hayden and the first thing they say is watered down bourbon. Yep.
Not that I don't not
and
that
it's
like
not because they do, it's just the flavor kind of dissipates.
And it's not that I don't like it, right? Like
no,
it's easy to drink. It was a great conversation, but we've now gotten mm-hmm. to the point where it's like, hey, the complexity matters, and when complexity dissipates over the course of the episode, to me, I just don't think that's a very good bourbon.
No. And I think so I think to kind of put a bow on it, I think if you are somebody who is trying bourbon with a bunch of friends and you know you and your friends are going through it and you're trying to figure out your bourbons, I think that if you were to buy this bottle, bring it, present it to them and say, hey, let's sit and sip through it, you would be highly regaled because the bottle looks amazing. The story behind it is great. It's aged 5 years. It says small batch on the label. I think it'll put you in a good position and those newer bourbon drinkers will be like, wow, this is fantastic. But I think if you take it on the flip side, no.
Well, and I'm going to give you two, right? Two bottles I would buy over this if I'm introducing people to bourbon. Number one.
Larceny.
No.
Oh, I was going to say Larceny.
Just your standard small batch Elijah Craig.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah.
Right?
You know that's my go-to.
Yeah. But my mm-hmm. point is for $40, I think the flavor profile is very similar.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Elijah Craig loves
okay.
a lot of bourbon.
But hey, number two, let's go a price point above that. It's $69 per bottle. McKenna 10-year.
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm.
For $70?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a whole nother level of bourbon.
But it's $70 for a 10-year age bourbon versus...
I mean, we could go down the list yeah. for $70.
That's what I'm saying.
I love
I'm
it.
So, I just, that's why I'm looking at it. I'm going, you know what?
You know what's funny is my wife tries to categorize bourbons on the proofing, right? Mm-hmm. And I brought the Old Soul home. And she doesn't drink bourbon like we do, but she knows her bourbon. So she compared it to a Booker's. And
nobody
she goes,
drinks bourbon like we do.
No.
It's like 1% of the population.
She compared it to a Booker's, and she said, Booker's is 100% times less complex than the Old Soul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, so I think it became very right. one-dimensional,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and that's why 6.5.
Especially compared
listen,
to the ones
I love the
had.
Story. I
yes.
love the idea behind
it's
it.
Not a bad bourbon.
It's not a bad
Please
bourbon.
Please know that. It's not a bad bourbon.
But our job is to give you the real input that we have, and you know what? Good bourbon, bad bourbon, We're going to be honest with you about it.
We like, are. That's 100%. It. We are. That's and it. I'm not. I don't want to tell anybody to spend $70 on this.
No, bottle. I wouldn't. I would. I
just wouldn't.
No. I, we all left not last my week. We had a bourbon so good that last week, all three of us left with a bottle.
Yep.
That was
and
the best one that we
2010,
rated.
Which yep. is pretty like, fucking phenomenal that you just made it 2010. Yep. And you brought us a
yeah,
good product.
100%. Right direction, but just not. Yeah. Yeah.
Just yeah,
not
in I the think they could use some.
They tea. Have a market. They yep. have a market. Yep. I will say that.
Yes.
They might need to spend a little bit more money on some development, I think.
All right. So let's go ahead, guys. Where can they find us? Where can they find you?
OscarTheRealtor.com. OscarTheRealtorCO.
The Colorado Real Estate Guy.
Everywhere. Find me at That Lifting Agent, The Lifting Agent. If you need any video production info, Beat the Jeans Productions, BeatTheJeansProductions.com. But, guys, you could always reach out to us, have conversations with us, have a bourbon with us at any point in time. Talk about
the real estate
market.
I'm still waiting for that phone call. You want to come to the Rouge and have a bourbon?
Yeah.
I'll come meet you here.
Send us a text. Serious. But you can send us an email, phone call. You can reach out to us, RESOTR@themilehighperspective.com, or give us a phone call or text.
720-584-3361. Hope you guys have a happy holidays, and we'll catch you later.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and really anywhere that you listen to podcasts. For the video version, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective. And to stay up to date with all the specials and events going on at the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro, visit their website, therougewinebar.com.